dbkmediaservices.com.
Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, Derek Webb, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, SVC fans, wherever you might be and whatever you might be doing, besides listening to episode 192 of SVC Sports Talk. This is Bruce Knox, one of your hosts for tonight's show. And we, as usual, are brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. That is located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, just off Bridge Street behind the Hampton Inn. You can give them a call, 740-773-7529. Look them up on the web, www.TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. And they are our billboard sponsor. Now I'd like to bring in the two gurus of SVC sports of all kinds, different flavors and everything. We have Mr. Shane Combs of SVC Sports Zone. How are you, Shane?
Great, Bruce. How are you getting along this week?
I am just fine, considering it's a holiday. We're actually recording this on Labor Day, so you've been off work. You're probably rested and ready to really hit the ground running here as we talk SVC sports.
Oh, yeah. Good agenda tonight. A lot to talk about.
Yep. And Mr. Derek Webb. Derek, how are you?
Good. I'm glad to get the day off. Glad to be back on SVC Sports Talk, and excited for this another busy week. So
we're gonna talk all kinds of things, and you guys have been busy. I saw you on Facebook Live on Friday night, or I guess it was Saturday night, out at Zane Trace, and that's kind of our first topic here. Before we really get into the regular agenda, I wanted to say, I did see you out there at Zane Trace's facility, and I'm sure you guys have quite a lot to talk about as a result of that fabulous night out there. I guess it was fabulous as far as the facilities and so forth. The outcome we didn't particularly care for, but why don't you kind of give us a rundown of what you thought on the facility and the atmosphere and what it does for the league? Shane, we'll go to you first.
Well, I just thought, yeah, it was just really nice. I mean, there's something about the almost a perfection or a real, you know, just a neatness or just a real organization to the turf facilities. And I think just having the opportunity to appreciate it that much more because it was a facility that I'd been out on several times before. So you always have that compare contrast feeling when you walk out there to watch a game and so forth. Just really, really nice. It does not just for their athletes, their programs, their school, but it's really, again, it's fan friendly. It's a comfortable place to be. And it's just really good for your league. I've always said when league schools around upgrade their facilities, not only those people win, but really the league as a whole wins. Because of the different levels of atmospheres and different things you get to offer your kids. You know, Derek, I know you had a chance to be down there on the field with me. Just that was your first time being out there, other than maybe just an interview in the preseason. Is that correct?
Yeah, first time for a live event. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Just your thoughts. What do you think?
You know, it's I think my favorite part about it is, and this is me just probably being weird with OCD, but I like the different colors. If you go out to Zane Trace, it's you know, from the 5 to the 10 yard line, they've got green, like a dark green. From the 10 to the 15 yard line, they've got a light green. Then it goes dark green, light green, dark green, you know, all the way down the field. You know, I was talking to Zane Trace athletic director Alan Coker, and I told him, I said, man, that field looks good. I said, but my favorite thing about it is that the multicolor. And he said, you know, when they laid the first the dark green strip down, I thought, man, this is going to look awesome. And he said, but then when they laid the next light strip down, I thought, man, this looks terrible. Like, this looks this is so ugly. And he said, but once they got the field completed, they put the red in the end zones. You know, they painted the soccer lines on the field. He said, you know, we loved it. We fell in love with it. So it's just the crown jewel of football fields in the SVC now. And, you know, it was a lot of fun to be out there and a lot of fun just to stand on the turf, you know, around the players and It seems like the speed of the game is a little bit quicker, right?
Yeah. Especially when Waverly's playing offense.
Yes, absolutely.
but we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah. Do you think, guys, that it just gives Zane's Trace the best overall outdoor facility now in the SEC?
I think what's fun about that, Bruce, is everybody can have their opinion. Obviously, when you upgrade a facility like that, that's probably a fair statement in the eyes of many. I think what happens for Zane Trace that's different for so many other schools, beyond just their football, which has great numbers. So, you know, you're going to have 7th and 8th grade junior high. You're going to have JV football. A lot of times you're even going to have some freshman football. Then you have boys and girls soccer. Now, that's happening at the junior high level, the JV level, the varsity level. So you have so many different things. Now, other schools have done some really neat things, too. You know, Uniota has a separate soccer field with lighting on it. They put some new locker room facilities. Their outdoor facilities are really good. I know at Paint Valley, we take a lot of pride in our grass field. Mm-hmm. If you haven't been out there on a Friday night, that's one of the really, really beautiful grass field facilities in all of Southeast Ohio. We've upgraded our baseball facility. The problem that we run into, though, is you get different things. The softball field's improved. You run into not having access to run the cross country course the way you'd like to lay it out. So different things. So I think some of the different things that Zane Trace is going to be able to host, their location, their different things, certainly puts it in the mix. But I think everybody, you go around the league, takes a lot of pride in their facilities. I know Southeastern has a beautiful facility. Python has nice facilities on their on outside on a lot of their different fields. So yeah, I'm sure everybody is going to be a little bit biased there. Mm-hmm. You know, I certainly think it's a beautiful place, and I'm sure something Zane Trace is really proud of, and rightfully so.
I'm sure you guys had a lot of fun out there, and we'll talk a little bit more about football. But right now, we've got a great agenda this week. Fans, stay with us. Up next, we'll talk volleyball, where the league started with many headlines in week one. Well, we're back with episode 192 of season 7. And I guess it is season 7. That's a long time, Shane. We've been doing this, but gets better every year. It seems like we've got a lot more to talk about. It was the opening week of SVC volleyball, and you mentioned that Uniodo's stat sheet's starting to make a little sense to you. Why don't you talk to us about that?
Yeah, for me, guys, this was one of my headlines in the early going. Anytime you get to watch a team over a couple year period, as much as I have this team, I've studied this team. I've called some of their games live. Just a team that I know really, really well. And as I was watching them early in the year, they just seemed out of rhythm. They were doing some different things with rotations. Obviously, we had talked about that Logan Elm. Obviously, Aaron Ridenour, former coach, obviously knew that team really well and had the talent on his Logan Elm team to attack different things and do different things. But I guess what I mean by the headline is volleyball is one of those things of structure, of rhythm, of getting into great rotations and kind of really knowing what the person to your left and right, front, behind is doing. And I start to see that as I look at the stat sheets alone for Uniota. The second ball is really starting to find Maddie Everts. She's able to distribute it properly. That balanced hitting attack, and even through the balance, you're still getting the proper distribution to make sure that a Taylor and McGlone and a Fisher are touching it the proper amount of times. Pinkerton is starting to get back into the mix of a normal passing, you know, in terms of touches and getting her hands early in the year. They seemed out of rhythm with her a little bit. And then that's putting some of the other passers, be it Cottrell, Coleman, some different people getting involved there. So obviously Hall on the weak side gives them some things too. So just to me, Derek, when I can look at their stat sheet alone and I can almost get a sense through ball handling, touches, passing, you know, serve receives, digs, you know, errors here and there, serving, just, and I know that team well enough to really get a feel for them. And to me, the stat sheet alone starts to tell the story. I know you actually had a chance to see them in person again this past week. They seem to really be hitting their stride. Just your thoughts on Coach Stolle and the Lady Shermans there.
Yeah, you know, I think I got to see them play Piketon. They swept, really a hot Piketon team this past Tuesday when they came in. And, I kind of thought, well, with Chandler and Morris there for the Red Streaks, so let's see how Unyota responds, because they do take that early season loss to Logan Elm, as you said, Logan Elm. It's Monday. I feel like it's Sunday still. So the week has started, right? But then they go and play. They play Waverly and Chillicothe, and then beat another team. And it's kind of like, okay, well let's see them get tested, because they hadn't played hitters like Chandler and Morris at that point. And they really, Chandler and Morris are going to get theirs no matter what. But they really kind of shut them down. And my first question to Natalie Stelly was, well, I mean, this was balanced tonight, because you saw on the stat sheet that night where five or more players had five or more kills.
Right.
And so if you look at the overall stat sheet, you've got three kids and Amanda McGlone, Ashley Taylor, and Josie Fisher who have over 50 kills. And there's no other team in the SVC that can say that. No other team in the area that can say that. Mm. I think that you look at those three, and then you look at how deep they can be. I mean, we're not even you mentioned Emily Coleman, but they bring in Kaylin Rose to serve. I mean, they can play Alexis Miller, I'm sure, if they had to. You look kind of at the roster. They've got the Cottrell back in the back row. They've got as you said Pinkerton in the back row. I mean, so they're just so deep, and really anywhere the ball is hit, you can feel confident that they're going to get a good swing on the ball at the net. So yeah, I mean, I think they're hitting their stride, which is bad news for all the other SBC teams. But I would also mention, Shana, that Maddie Ebers is 39 assists away from 2,000. So she's got 181 this year. So we talk about 1,000 assists, but how rare is 2,000? Wow. I know you're a big setter guy. And Maddie Ebers has been.
Well, and we've talked a lot about that, because with the rally scoring not being around as long, we've talked, Bruce, on past years on SVC Sports Talk, trying to get a feel for what the milestone numbers are. And, she probably is one of our great examples. She spotted some time due to an injury in a couple matches her freshman year, but she's basically been in about a 5-1 system for it'll be 3 years. So she probably does set kind of a high bar. I think a lot of people will tell you about the 1,500 assist mark is probably, obviously 1,000 is a huge deal. 1,500 is a big deal. And Derek's exactly right. 2,000 becomes elite when you're talking about the setting the ball out. But yeah, when they pass the ball on target to her, her vision and her hands and stuff, and just her ability to put the ball into the proper people's hitting zone, it really tells the story. So yeah, they're tough to beat when they pass it and they get that balanced attack going.
Hey, we had a little bit of feedback from a fan who's asking why Southeastern's 4-0 start has been a little bit more quiet start in terms of attention, whereas Piketon's 4-1 start seems like it grabbed more attention. First, let's just put this into the good old fair unfair. Shane, do you think that's a fair unfair statement? And then kind of explain why you feel that way, and then we'll throw it to Derek after you get done.
Well, I think it's a fair observation. Yeah. I think that what happens is, I say it's a fair observation, but I also think the coverage was justified. So what I mean by that is, Piketon had more of a spread of nights. They had a couple milestones. We just mentioned milestones. We had the tension with Conley and Chandler. I'm sure Morris is close. Speaking of milestones, she's got to be a kid that's going to approach that number later in the year. Their SVC opponents were a little bit better. The matchups with the Uniota, Huntington, just a little bit more enticing. I know from my perspective, not wanting to speak for Derek, I know just on my end, I wanted to really go and take a look at the Lytle girl passing the volleyball one night. Remember, we had the interview last week where I talked to the coach directly about that. So with Southeastern, maybe you don't have as many questions up front. I'm a little bit more familiar. Maybe I was going through this stage with them a year ago, where with Piketon, I'm taking a look more there. At the same time, though, Southeastern played on a Wednesday night. I believe we had a round table. I believe it was a Wednesday night when they had that the try. Their two SVC matches were kind of matches they were heavily favored in. So I think what happens here, and Derek, you'll certainly jump in and give a Gazette perspective. I think for me, when the schedules flip, and we start to get into more matchups, we'll start to see some of that coverage flip. But you know, it's not that I still don't have my eyes on what they're doing. You know, with Goble, again, that balanced attack. We talked about distribution. When I say balanced attack, you want to be balanced, but at the same time, you want to make sure Skeens is getting the proper distribution in terms of attacks. I think Heiss is really, really underappreciated in our league. People know the size of Collins, the improvement of Boldy last year. We know about DeLong all the way back to her freshman year to Dina. So I think what happens sometimes is we don't really appreciate just how good Heiss is in the all-around game. So we certainly have our eye on what Southeastern's doing. If you've listened to the show, we've never talked favorites in the SVC this year without having their name somewhere right in the first sentence. Yeah, I think for me it's a fair observation, but justified because of those reasons I had given. Just what are you thinking coverage wise, Derek, as you move forward with Southeastern?
Well, I mean, you know, we're going to cover Southeastern at Edina this Thursday, and I can tell you why is because they're playing somebody. I know that sounds terrible, but you know, their first four opponents, we kind of chalked them up already to wins. Let's put it that way. Just because they're so good. They've got so many good players, and they bring pretty much everybody back from a regional semifinal team last year. So when you look at a McLean, you look at a Porsche McLean, even a Paint Valley and Westfall, who's in the SEC, you know, you can probably, I guess, kind of guess that Southeastern's going to win those games. And, you know, they have, as we guessed, yet to lose a set. Mm-hmm. Now, when they start to play Edina, then they go into Huntington-Piketon, then Uniota, you know, that next week, which is a huge matchup. You know, obviously you're going to see a lot more coverage of Southeastern. You're going to see a lot more coverage of Southeastern, you know, in the tournament run that they're going to have, because I really think they're going to go very far in the tournament run. So, I think, and as you said, Shane, you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said the Piketon had a couple milestones. You can't miss those. And you know, because if we're not, me being one person, if I have to be there, I can't be at Southeastern as well, or Uniota or wherever that night. So, but yeah, I mean, I can guarantee that from a Gazette perspective, that Southeastern is going to be covered a lot more, just because they're so good.
Guys, another question came up in feedback, and to ask basically, are you more shocked at Huntington's level of play or Edina's level of play, Shane?
Well, this actually had come in, I mean, literally a couple hours after the Huntington win over Edina, yeah. And then there was some follow up feedback a couple nights later after Huntington had lost to Piketon, you know, kind of asking some different questions. I guess for me, guys, I was shocked at both. Let me explain why, and then I'll tell you why maybe a little bit more shocked at Edina. On the Huntington side, I was shocked at the balance. To be this early in the process and to see you knew Collins had the ability at the net. Black, but I mean, when you look at Hooks and Conley and McCloskey and Etler and some kids across the front there, Huntington had the ability, four or five kids to go on the attack, to put up a decent block. They kept the ball alive. The rallies were really long. It felt like the Edina match was four sets. It felt like you're in the gym for 3.5 hours. There's just some really long volleys. And so that surprised me a little bit. In a good way. I thought I was really encouraged for Huntington sticking their nose into this top half discussion and maybe even the you know, challenging Edina over the 14-game schedule for that top half. Now, a couple nights later, I know they struggled with Piketon. A lot of that's just a matchup thing, though. With Edina, like I said, they were able to keep the ball alive and do some things, where with Piketon, you start volleying with them back and forth two, three, four times, and at some point Chandler and Morse just going to stick the ball down your throat. Mm-hmm. That's the difference, is that put-away threat that maybe Edina's lacking. The reason I say I was more shocked, guys, on the Edina side, I think we knew that. You know, that part didn't shock me in terms of them not having the offense. What shocked me was a staple of their program over their 30-year dynasty has just been defense and mm-hmm. and their passing, their serving, the efficiency they play with, just how few unforced errors they make. And I was just really surprised just how many times they just simply beat themselves. Now, they're young. Even a lot of the four or five kids they have back are playing totally different roles. It was the first night. I thought Edina was a team that was hurt by what we talked about last week on the show about scheduling. I think that team would have benefited greatly from playing two or three times leading in the league play. You know, obviously they went on to win on Thursday. They on Saturday they go 2-1 at the Lehman Catholic Labor Day invite that they always play in. So that's encouraging. So there's no doubt in my mind when Laura Smith and Don Atchison are coaching the team, they're going to get better every single time they enter the gym. But I have to say, early in the year, when I think of the staples of the two shade blue over the years, I think of efficiency, and I just didn't see that night. So that's probably where I stand at there on the shocked, but the most shocked with the Adina side.
Derek, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I mentioned it earlier in the year. I think, you know, Adina's very young this year. You know, they lost the Putnam and the Carroll of last year, you know, kind of their big hitters. But they also brought back Kelsey Bossert, Abby Stark, Lainey Shea. So some of the names that you're familiar with, they also brought those guys back. I'd say if I had to pick between the two, I would say I'm more surprised with Shane, with Adina's kind of some of the errors, some of the defensive miscues. But as Shane said, they're going to get better every single time out. I still think, though, they're going to have to go through some growing pains. I mean, they do have two freshmen that are, you know, contributing, if you just look at the stats. You know, pretty mightily with an Olivia Riley and Ari Darif. I hope I'm saying that right. It's Aridarif. But so they've got youth on the court. And then with Hannah Stark, Shane, we watched her last year, and we know she's going to be an imperative part in that program for the next couple of years. She's just a sophomore as well. So at any given time, they could have two freshmen and a sophomore on the court. So I think they're going to go through some growing pains, but still, Adina's Adina. In a couple of years here, there's not really Adina fans don't know what a down year is. They're not going to have a down year this year, but I don't see them winning the SBC this year just because of those growing pains. Now, next year is a different story. You know, time will tell then.
But, Bruce, I do think they have to be encouraged by the weekend. And then keep in mind, you have to be really encouraged if you're Huntington. For them to be playing at the level they are early in the year, they're going to return almost that entire roster. They'll lose one or two kids, but that's a program that has some depth to it. They're a lot better in their fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth athlete than a lot of other teams around the league. So that's an interesting storyline to follow as well.
All righty, so that's volleyball. Let's head to golf in our playing through segment.
Yeah, sounds good. The Crown Hill Golf Club are playing through segment. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. Had a chance to talk to a couple different golf coaches from throughout the area. I was in a fantasy football draft with one today, and they're talking about the Crown Hill invite, the Westfall invite, and they couldn't believe how incredible of shape it was in with all the rain and the different things. So I thought I'd give a shout out to a sponsor. That's not coming from me. That's coming from, you know, the golf coaches and some of the golf teams from throughout the area. And that's just the feedback you're going to get. I think you're going to be hard pressed to go up there and play and not be impressed with the facilities. You hear me talk about it every week. So again, give them a call, 740-986-4653. And Bruce, I guess I start with, Uniota wins again.
Yeah.
With Schoblock and Calvin finally being able to put the good nights together in the league match. And when they do that, they're so tough to beat, because if you really look at it, Derek, as I break down the scoreboard, you know, they had the two great rounds at 38-39. Well, then the rest of the rounds with Gerber, Rose, Throckmorton, and Luke and Levi there, you're looking 44-46, where on the Piketon side, you know, they're so balanced that 40, 41, 42, a couple 44, so they're dropping a 44 as well. Really, the difference in the victory for Uniota comes at those top two guys, which is what, you know, I've heard you kind of talk about. You want to see those two kind of carry the load there. But Piketon continues to play well and continues to post scores. They're certainly going to be a factor in this thing. But the fact that this happened, guys, at Big Beaver, I think, is the storyline here. This was really a Piketon opportunity to really go into the second half of the year and really put the pressure on Uniota. I think Uniota winning this one is really important. Guys, we moved to Valley Vista now. Valley Vista, probably a little bit more of a Big Beaver Dogwood feel. Once we get through this Valley Vista match, the course is really lengthened. When we go Crown Hill, JC's, Cook's Creek, usually it turns into more of a long ball hitter. As the course lengthens, usually what happens is you start to get the top two or three teams really separate themselves. So I really feel like the Valley Vista match is crucial. If Westfall were ever going to jump up and get someone, you could think maybe it would be at home at Crown Hill. They're still a factor in this, not to win it, but maybe to knock one of those guys off into a third place finish one night. So those are the things. I will say before I get Derek's take here, guys, I've had some good questions and some good comments on golf this week asking me about all league questions with some of the teams not putting the full roster out there each mm-hmm. time. Yeah, kids can still make all league. So when you're playing on those teams, the kids can still play all league. They play in 7 of the 8 matches. They can drop their lowest score. If you look on our website right now, one of the great features of our website is down at the bottom of our golf page, you'll see our Good Health Chiropractic Center. That's Dr. Chris Good. Visit him out on East 2nd Street. Give him a call there, 740-773-GOOD. And you'll see our individual leaderboard. Right now it shows after 3 of 8 matches. In the red, you'll see the score that drops, and that's how we figure that average. And as long as they play in all of them, that score will remain dropped there. So right now, the 44.5 is the cutoff to make all league, which is really kind of high compared to years past. But as you've heard me say, I think we're in a rebuilding, a transition year. But I did want to share that with the fans that we'll still have our top 15, and those kids can make that. So wanted to share that and give a shout out to Doc Good, because he's been so good to the website from year one. Now that we're in year 10, he's been with us all the way through. Hmm. But, you know, Derek, if you go back and take a look at the main headline here of Uniota wins again, and talk about Schoblock and Calvin. Just your thoughts. Uniota seems, again, as we hit the halfway point, to maybe be hitting their stride and looking to take control of this thing.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you talk about you talk about all league for a player of the year, I tell you what, Ty Schoblock's going to be tough to beat. You know, he's already 2 strokes ahead of Woolridge there. If you look at the SEC Sports Zone standings, and he's a good kid. If you've ever talked to him, good kid, level head on his shoulders, very personable, and he knows his golf course. And if you talk to Dan Drummond, Dan will tell you what he does wrong, and then you watch him, it's like, does he really? so that's the coach's yeah. perspective. But from a media perspective, Ty Schoblock does everything right on the course. So I think it's really going to be hard for him to even get beaten in Player of the Year race. But with him and Calvin at the top, you say Uniota hitting it stride, and that's scary for any other SEC team, including Piketon. I think Piketon will be very dangerous. They're obviously the closest to Uniota. They could be even get back to a state meet if they play well during the district meet. But I believe, Shane, that they only take one from each district this year. So it's a little bit tougher to get there last year where they did, but they took two last year to state where Piketon made it. So, as we've said all along, this is a 2-horse race to me. I think Westfall is a good team, as you said, but they're just not right now at the caliber Uniota and Piketon is. I'd say, but it's been fun to watch. I mean, it's been really, really fun to cover, fun to watch between Uniota and Piketon. And I think Piketon kind of stole SBC number one, and I think maybe we're seeing a little bit of what we thought we might see in SBC number two and number three.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. All righty, guys. It's good on golf. Let's head to a look at the inbox brought to you by C&K Athletic Equipment. They are your supplier for all kinds of sports equipment, headwear, sports accessories, fitness gear, and local school apparel for SVC teams. You can give them a call up in Circleville at 116 East High Street. Their telephone number is 740-477-9828. Tell them the boys from SVC Sports Talk sent you. Well, football talk today starts in the inbox, and people are talking about the spread offense, Shane.
Yeah, they really are. It's kind of been a fun thing. It's taken off. A couple people in person had one comment in the inbox, maybe not say directly the spread offense, but what they were describing certainly had the features of some of the conversations I had. As I get into this, first of all, I want to say sorry to our listeners if we missed some of your topics. We had a really busy week with some feedback. So some of the 8th grade comments, some of the enrollment questions, again, I'll continue to roll those over and try to get those into some topics as I look to combine topics. But, yeah, guys, on the spread offense, basically a lot of the fans kind of having mixed feelings about it. They it's obviously taking over a lot of levels of football or different versions of the spread. I think for me, guys, it's fun, It's something that puts kids and athletes in space. I think it's certainly easier to sell to the kids, to the fans. You'll hear some people talk about in a day of the physicality, if you don't have a lot of the numbers or the offensive line or in the trenches, you can spread athletes out. I kind of like when teams go with pace. We talked about the Zane Trace Waverly game the other night. I put Waverly there on the clock a couple of times, Derek, and they were up at the line snapping the ball 10 seconds one time, 15 seconds one time, 16 seconds, and back to 12 seconds. And, I mean, they would go 8, 9, 10 play drives, and I would look down at your stat sheet there, and it would be like a minute 38. You know, yeah. It was just phenomenal, the weapons they had and the different pace they went out. Where a lot of these spread teams, you'll see them kind of get up to the line of scrimmage, and you'll think they're going to go with pace, but then they just stand there, and the tempo can kind of become lethargic. You know what I'm saying? Even though they're not huddling up, you still feel like that's the pace of it. I'd like more about it than I don't. I think if I was going to throw out a pet peeve before I hear from you guys on it, I think probably my biggest pet peeve is the short yardage. I hate it in the red zone when the field starts to shrink. I think if you can't get physical and run between the tackles at times, it's really difficult. But, you know, I hate seeing rooting hard for my team. I hate seeing a fourth and one when the quarterback's 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage taking the snap. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where I'm sure there's different techniques and different things there to where maybe in that sport, even though I have a good eye for the overall game, maybe I don't totally understand all the different X and O points or the technique points, but it's a situation where the short yardage is probably my biggest pet peeve of it that I don't like. But yeah, I think it's just something that is in the game to stay, and I think it's only going to evolve, and it is fun to watch when done correctly. You know, Derek, just your take, you can comment on Waverly there as well, but then just on the offense, the spread offense in general that you see in all the teams you cover.
Man, Waverly is such a good disciplined offensive team with Clayton Howe there at quarterback, and I don't know if you knew this or not, Shane, but Drew Kritzweiler the other night, we focused so much on the passing game and that spread offense. But Drew Kritzweiler had 36 carries, 36 for 216 yards the other night.
Yeah, and you're talking about a really, really good defense. I know that sounds funny to a lot of people. I'm telling you, we're going to talk here in a little bit. Zane Trace is good.
Right. With Drew Kritzweiler running the ball 36 times, Howell threw the ball 25 times. That gives you just the scope of just how many plays they did run, because other people carried the ball on other plays. Yeah. So Waverly just gets out, they get after it, and, you know, Chris Crabtree, Waverly's head coach, told me after the game, he said, you know, we want to get out and get the ball into our playmakers, and that's what they did. And if you allow Waverly to do that, you're going to get beat. And with Kane Jordan, who was phenomenal the other night, that's two straight 100-yard performances for him in the receiving game. You know, he's looking like Hal's top target, and then Hal could hit a Kobe Marquez or a Easton Wolf or a Johnny Thompson, you know, and it just keeps going on and on. It's like the Bengals offense, Bruce, you know, it's just so many weapons. Right?
Yeah, right.
Only Waverly's actually like they win games. So that's the difference. But yeah, when you talk about the spread offense in general, I love watching it as a guy that covers football games, just because it's fun. It may make for a little bit of a longer night for me with the clock stopping on incomplete pass attempts, but that's okay. I like seeing high school teams throw the football. When I cover Chillicothe, they do the same. When I haven't seen Huntington yet this year, but they're running the spread out there. Sounds like Westfall is passing the ball habitually. So, yeah, I mean, I like it as a fan. I can see where if you're a football purist and you want to see that, give Marshawn Lynch the ball on the 1 yard line the Super Bowl, I kind of get that. But as a fan, I love watching it, and I think it just brings more excitement to the high school game. For fans, for players, even like you said, and for people like us.
Well, Bruce, I think what happens too is you get a lot of athletes in space. You know, he mentioned Gibson at Westfall. I know Tyler Gallion talked a lot about, I know the Yates kid at Benton County was really special the other night. Just being able to get athletes in space. And, you know, the reason I wanted him to talk a little bit about Waverly is Waverly had played Piketon, played Zane Trace, going to play Uniota in the upcoming week. I thought our SVC fans would enjoy hearing that, but it's certainly something that you can't argue with the excitement of some of the big play capability. But I did hear some fair feedback on the other side too, and some things that, you know, they're not crazy about it. So
it makes for a really busy night for PA announcers. I do know that.
I bet it does.
Well, anyway, more to come on that, I'm sure, throughout the season. Another piece of feedback came in and started with flag football, talking flag football in the area. Looked a little bit to Little League and all sports, the philosophy of Little League, obviously, in school to school, different programs. How young and talked about recognition to the junior high level. Why don't you kind of fill us in there, Shane, on what that was?
This has been about 2 weeks all mixing together, and I apologized to certain people earlier, I kind of skipped over a couple things last week. Got a couple more things this week. Someone asking about junior high, and I was able to point them to our junior high page that we take a lot of pride in there. Again, we don't want to do too much on the junior high. We want them to kind of earn their keep, if you will, and work toward getting that recognition at the varsity level. But at the same time, we feel like what's different about our website is we're trying to give a service just to our league schools and to our programs, and it is good for recognition. But this had started a lot, guys. The foundation of this conversation started with many schools coming back to the flag football and going away from some of the travel ball or the third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade tackle. And I guess I wanted to reach out to some football people. I'm not in favor of tackling before the seventh grade. I think for me, I look at it as, you know, I may not be a quote unquote football guy, but I feel like I can be a program builder. And for me, flag football promotes numbers. It gets more kids involved. I think kids are almost intrigued by the tackle football. So I think your seventh and eighth grade numbers, like if I look back in the past, are just going to naturally be bigger because kids want to, hey, I'm going to go try that. They might be physically more ready for it in the seventh and eighth grade. So I reached out to some football people and I got their opinions. And I would say 80% of the people I talked to from about four or five different schools seem to be more in favor of the flag football. Now, they may not go on record and publicly say that. I think that's why some of the people that have jumped out in front and have done this, I think a lot of people have really appreciated, because they might not have wanted to stamp their name to it, especially if they're young coaches or different things and being the trendsetter. But I think what the feedback I've been able to get, the flag football puts kids into more of a realistic skill set. You know, your fast kids are running the football. Your stronger, bigger kids are blocking. You're doing a lot of different, you know, scheme things like that, and it's putting them in a more realistic learning environment. The numbers, again, go way up. Less kids will quit by the seventh grade. So, you know, anyone who's listened to me on the show for the last 7 years, and Bruce is probably thinking, oh, boy, here we go. Yeah. with Little League sports, you know, I'm not the big travel guy. When I carry this over into others, I think it was last year's senior class. I can remember when they were in the third and fourth grade, and I was just begging people, especially at the small school. I was saying that the Zane Trace, Chillicothe, Uniotas, those types of schools might be able to figure it out. But it was going to destroy numbers at the small school if we weren't careful. And I'll tell you a great example. You look what last year in our boys' basketball league, Derek, we had three teams without a freshman boys' basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, someone who's done this for, you know, 30 years, been around high school sports for 30 years, you could just see it coming, and you were just begging people not to do it. And it's unfortunate. You know, I just think we get in a huge hurry. As a coach and a teacher, I think sports and academics, we go and get in a big hurry, and I'm not sure exactly why. But I tell you, the more coaches can get involved, you know, parents have to allow it. Parents have to give coaches a chance to put their program in place and explain their philosophy in the Little League. And you have to understand, when you have a Uniota volleyball night compared to, you know, maybe a Huntington football night, you know, the number of elementary kids that are going to be out on the court or out on the field are going to be different, because again, that's an enrollment thing. But you have to have a different philosophy, and parents have to be willing to let the coaches sell that there. So yeah, we're going to continue to honor some of our junior high on there and build up. But I love the Little League discussion too, in terms of what's building numbers throughout the program. So if people have more comments on that, by all means, bring it in. You know, Derek, I know you don't cover that as much, but I know you're always able to give such a neat perspective on growing up at the bigger school and now covering so much of a variety of enrollments of schools. Do you have any comment before we move on here just on Little League sports in general?
You know, I mean, me and my dad in the summer have a little league baseball team, and I know it's completely different than football. But what we focused on is not winning. It's not what the scoreboard says, and actually, we're pretty good. but we don't care. I mean, we want the kids to learn the game. And to me, even in any sport, baseball, football, basketball, whatever, that's at that level, that's the number one, important factor, if you would. You know, if they're learning the game without tackling, but they're learning, you know, formations, schemes, kind of like what you said, that's what matters to me. When they get to the seventh and eighth grade, those coaches can teach them how to tackle. But for me, at that level, the fundamentals and you know, just kind of getting a feel of being on a football field is what's important. So I'm with you, Shane.
Hey, Bruce, real quick, I don't mean to add to the agenda too much here, but give us a Vinton County perspective. I know Vinton County is a much bigger school than all but, say, Zane Trace, maybe Uniota in our conference. But, you know, Vinton County is known for pretty good participation in their little league sports. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt like it comes from a lot of community involvement. Is that something that is over the years been generated from a culture? Is it the leadership of some key people? Well, tell us a little bit about how that's formed there in terms of being so successful and getting so many different girls and boys involved in Little League sports.
Well, I think you touched on that. There is a core group, and just I'm most familiar with basketball, so I'll talk about that. Okay. But, you know, we've got Judge Bob Grillo over here, and Bob has been putting together the basketball league. So there is a basketball league for boys and girls, and I don't know exactly at what point it starts, you know, what grade or anything, but those kids, and Bob's been doing it for, I don't know, it's something like 30 plus years now.
Wow.
And so he takes the leadership role, but he's got a great gaggle of people that, you know, facilitate it. And so they do that. But in addition to that, then they also do the travel teams as well. And I think it's a little different in travel basketball as it is, you know, football or something like that. But there are travel football teams as well now. And we just, you know, it does. I question sometimes, do you burn kids out a little bit by the time they get to seventh grade or whatever? It seems like we have oodles and oodles of participation up into the sixth grade level. And then at seventh grade level, it drops off dramatically. And I just kind of question sometimes, are we burning them out by that time?
But I remember Jeremy Ward saying on the show, I thought he put it so simple the one time on SVC Sports Talk, saying common sense tells you if a large percentage of kids start something in the fourth grade, they're more likely to have those kids quit it by the seventh or eighth grade, where they used to start it in the seventh grade.
Yeah,
they were more apt to, you know, go through the cycle and quit it in the 10th or 11th grade. Made a lot of sense to me.
Well, so. I don't really know. And, you know, this would be a good thing for feedback from other people that are listening right now.
We talk about enrollment all the time. We really do need some small school, big school. But I think the thing that in listening to Bruce there, Derek, and I'm sure Chillicothe same way, but this goes all the way down to the small school, because I see it all the way down at like Paint Valley. I think that the theme here is you need a connection of coach, but you also need a connection of community. And when the two work together, that seems to be when the successful formula is at best. Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that are developed down in those regions too, you know. So usually come up through, and many, many people that are on the varsity level and the high school levels have started down there. Most of them have, yeah. Well, we're 2 weeks now into football, and I was just wondering what question or questions have been answered from week one to week two.
Well, Derek, I don't know if any have been. I'm confused as ever. I don't know. I think I did end up 7-3, but I felt like I was 3-7 this past week. I mean, just – Vinton County seems to be butting into the show here a bunch tonight, but like, I think Vinton County's one team, Bruce, that has the SVC really confused. They turn it over six times and lose to Uniota, then they beat Piketon. But again, we know Uniota has some great athletes. I think in our preview show, we did talk a lot about Piketon has a lot of talent, maybe a little lack of speed. Maybe that matchup was bad. Obviously, weather was a huge factor the other night. But I think Adina's young. Their schedule kind of had them, you know, look good, look bad. Huntington's a different system. They're playing a lot of opponents kind of the opposite way they did last year. So they're kind of a weird team to figure out right now. Painting Valley's certainly better, but they're still young, and they're going through a couple, 2 to 3 weeks part of their schedule that's really, really tough. I think Southeastern's on their way to 3-0, and they're going through like your Bengals did there for a while, where they almost had to figure out until they went in the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? It's, you know, okay, they're 3-0 again. So I think
we're still going through that.
I think people are going to do that. I think the one question we answered that we already knew, Bruce, is Gibson's really good at Westfall. But here's the thing I'll say off the other night. I don't remember a time, and then I'll let Derek kind of talk questions. I don't remember a time where I watched a team get beat by 2, 3, 4 touchdowns. I mean, I think the final score was 13, but I mean, Waverly pretty much controlled the game. I don't remember a time I watched a team lose like that and walked to my car thinking, man, they're really good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I walked to my car the other night thinking from field level that Zane Trace was really, really complete. I mean, the defense is as advertised. I mean, very few people. And again, it made me impressed with Piketon's effort the week before, because as I watched that Waverly offense, man, they're tough. They're tough to defend at a lot of different levels. So I think the balance of the Zane Trace defense, they're going to put 5, 6 different guys out there that are going to probably have over 50, 60 tackles this year. Palmer had the pick 6 the other night, so it's a unit that can make the big play. They can turn you over. They can score. And then offensively, with games in the middle, with Palmer, with Shanton, the passing game came on. Rittenhouse is a weapon. Waller had a nice night. I mean, this is a pretty good football team. That is going to be real interesting, because you expect them to roll in week 3, Derek, and then that's going to take them in SVC play, and we'll see how it plays out. But I guess there's still just a lot of questions for me, even though that we're three weeks in. What do you have on your mind as we get ready for this last non-league week?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. There's still a lot of questions I'd like to have answered. I guess you look at the Zane Trace team, like you said, and if I had to pick somebody to win the SEC just off of 2 weeks, which is absolutely means nothing, I would pick Zane Trace. I mean, just because of their physicality, their size, their depth. I think Coach Don Coons has done a really nice job with his Pioneers, and they have athletes all over the field. Haven't seen Uniota. I'd like them to answer some questions for me. They played a Vinton County team where they did turn the ball over 6 times. I think it'd be a lot closer of a game. Maybe we could see really, really what Uniota's about if they played the Vinton County team that didn't turn the ball over 6 times. Then they go to McLean and beat the Tigers 42-6, which, McLean's down. I just don't know how good Uniota's going to be. I think we're going to find out this week, though, when they play Waverly.
Well, kind of, but again, in fairness to them, can't you see us going into week 4 saying, well, McLean's not very good, but Waverly really is? I mean, we could still be just as confused.
Right, but if Uniota's that good, to me, they're going to play with Waverly. I guess I would look at it that way. They're the same division. They're the same size school. I think once Friday's result, and let me back up. Waverly is the same division, the same size school, but they look like, on paper at least, that they have a higher talent level just because of the passing game and because of the 36 carries for 216 yards for Kritz Weiser. But I'm just really anxious to see what happens in that game. I know it's going to be a tough one for Uniota going to Waverly. I don't want to give away too many of my picks this week, Shane, but I think you have to go with Waverly, right? Right. They're just on a roll. They're a great team. And then we get into the SVC schedule where, I think Uniota, just from what I've seen so far, wins, 5, 6 games. But still, I think Zane Trace has to be the favorite. Also, Shane, I'd like to see, a Southeastern team. I was kind of high on them earlier in the year, but you know, they're up 34 – or I'm sorry, they're up 28-8 against a Southeastern local team, and before you can blink, it's 28-22. So is that the type of team they're going to be, or are they going to, you know, be a 35-6 winner over Northwest every week? So it just depends. But like you said, yeah, questions swirl around, and I think I went like 5-5 or 6-4 this past week. So I had a rough pick at it.
Well, we'll have to keep track of who does better and bring that up on the show, because I think that'd be good for some sparring. Hey, guys, we need to move along here and go into our hurry-up offense.
Yeah, as always, guys, our hurry-up offense is brought to the fans by Crown Hill. Crown Hill, as I said earlier, great place. Check them out. The one thing I did want to mention, guys, is their facility. All of our programs, if you're going to schedule something in the off season, a scramble, some different things, if you're not already locked into a golf course in your local area, which I understand that you have to support those as well, make sure you give Kevin a call, 740-986-4653. Tell him SVC Sports Talk sent you. And, you know, Bruce, we'll go these are all, I believe, fan generated this week.
Some
really good ones. They really are. So if you're okay with it, let's start answering the fans here in our hurry up offense.
Can equipment really make the big of a difference? I see people spending so much money on different things to try to get an advantage, and it makes me wonder how much of it is needed.
Well, Shane, for me, I think that, you know, sometimes people go out and they buy an Under Armour visor. I'm sorry, but you don't need an Under Armour visor in high school football. I mean, you look good, but I if you have talent, you got talent. I mean, and so, but I guess if you go back to the, hey, if you look good, you feel good, you play good, you know, maybe that's the advantage they get. But to me, if you know, if you're the superior athlete on the field and you know, you're going to get the ball 36 times a game, or whatever it may be, you're going to do whatever you need to do, and you're still going to perform well, whatever you have on, whatever sleeves or compression shorts or whatever you have, you're still going to perform like the athlete that you are.
Well, that's an interesting take on the apparel side of it, because I do, obviously, if it has Nike swoosh or the Under Armour or whatever, that is funny stuff. Now, I do think equipment in terms of the sport, you just have to have knowledge of the sport. Take golf, for example. When I got back into golf air a couple of years ago and I was starting to hit with some of my old clubs, I was out of the game for 8 or 9 years. And so I was using some pretty outdated equipment. You know, guys, the minute I put the new set of clubs in my bag, I went from hitting, you know, say a 6-iron from 150 all the way to an 8, sometimes a 9. So you're talking 2 to 3 club difference. Obviously, the golf ball and the golf clubs and different things go. In baseball, you know, the size of gloves, the type of gloves, the pop and some of the bats and different things, they certainly do matter. But like, now Derek did make a good point. The talent level, you know, it's not gonna turn your 133 7-hole hitter into a 350 hitter. Okay, it's one of those things though. It certainly is going to give you a little bit more pop. It's going to give you some different things. So I think you have to have great knowledge of the sport. Really, really talk to some people you trust at the higher levels of that sport and so forth, and try to make educated decisions in those situations.
From the inbox, hey, love the show. I'm a big fantasy football guy and even enjoy playing some high school fantasy football with my buddies. As I get ready to draft my SVC guys for the 7 SVC weeks, what would be key things for me to think about from last year to this year?
Well, I mean, in any fantasy football league, I think it always depends on how you, what your format is, where you put the points. Is it a quarterback heavy league? Is it a running back heavy league? If it's a regular format where the running backs are, you know, I guess heavier picks or more important picks. You know, I think you have to look at maybe like a Southeastern team where Carson Stouffer and Dakota Hauser are both going to get the ball. So who do you pick there? And if it's quarterback heavy lead, I think you look at obviously the kids that are going to throw the ball or the teams that are in those systems, like a Huntington, like a Westfall, like a Piketon. So, but I tell you what, that's a tough chain. That's a tough fantasy football draft to pick SVC guys, because like we just said, we don't even know who's going to win week to week. So how do we know? How are you supposed to pick a fantasy team for the SVC? I think I'd be worse at that than I am actually picking the games.
Well, this is a really fun question. When I started to prepare for the show, I kind of kicked myself for putting it in here because I think this could almost be a segment where we break it down a little bit more.
True.
I think this is really fun, and I say the word fun. I just hope people understand that the way this has grown the last couple of years, from what I've heard, it's just kind of something on the side, some buddies together, some different leagues where they're not doing it for anything other than bragging rights, and they're just having some fun promoting and following the game. Keep in mind, when you're doing that, you're dealing with high school kids. You're not doing college students where they're making thousands and thousands of dollars or millions of dollars in the pros. So I think that's the first thing. As far as the fantasy football draft itself, I think it's the reps and chances. Like how many chances is Derek was talking about? And you really got to study your league. So when you look at some position changes, role changes, Blevins at Edina, you know, a Gibson at Westfall now getting full-time roles. I think you have to avoid balance sometimes. I think sometimes, you know, Zane Trace with Shanton and Games and Palmer, Southeastern with Ruby Stauffer, Hauser, Uniota even with Carroll Fisher-Poole. Sometimes you have to pick and choose, like he said, how's the scoring? Look at systems year to year. A Huntington Gavin Snyder was a fantasy star last year in a different system this year, you know, in some cases getting 20, 25 carries last year, only going to get more five, six touches this year. He's in a different role. So you have to study that. This year for the Huntington system, it might be more of like Derek said, and Elijah McCloskey. I'll tell you, a sleeper wide receiver might be a Seth Beeler. Paint Valley Piketon, you know, obviously with Younger, some game-to-game styles. The Grooms kid at Piketon jumps out at me. Newland, Mettler, McFadden, McDonald, all going to get touches there. So, you know, study your teams, study your matchups. But I think Derek made a good point on the scoring too. But, man, what a fun question. Hopefully we'll get to talk a little bit more about that as we highlight kids this year.
I heard on your Shout-O-Matic about Sylvia Gray's perfect game. I'm thinking this could be a Sports Zony Award later this year. What say you guys?
Well, first of all, I just like how Bruce just said Sports Zony. I thought that I'm kind of pumped up for the rest of the night. But with Sylvia Gray, I mean, yeah, she could win three of these awards. I don't think people understand, or, you know, some fans at least, how significant a perfect game is. That means she did not give up a single point. Not a game, not a point. And if you watch her play, it's not surprising. But I think it's surprising that it's not surprising, if that makes sense. I think she's headed to the state meet this past year, and or this coming year. And yeah, I think she's in line for a couple awards, not only from us, but from the tennis officials in Ohio as well.
Well, guys, I played tennis, I think, like three times in my life. Like, my wife and I played a couple times when we first married. And, you know, obviously, if you know my wife, then she was a phenomenal athlete in high school. And, you know, we played a little bit. Then my brother and I once went out and played tennis. And I think we promised never to tell this story, but since it's like 15 years ago now, I guess I can. I think we were tied somewhere in the third set. We both just almost agreed to. I think that's the only time in our life we ever agreed to call it like a tie and quit. So, I mean, I'm telling you, it's one of the hardest things I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And to think that you can go almost 50 reps, 50 points, and not make any mistakes. And talking to some tennis people around the area, the girl she's playing is not a bad player. She's a pretty good player. So it's phenomenal. Like I said, I'm probably not even smart enough to explain to the sports fan exactly how incredible this is. But yeah, congratulations to her. She continues to get better and better, and to think of all the things she's going to accomplish in her 4 years, it's just exciting to be a part of it.
After listening to last week's show, I thought about watching the Mitten Girl play soccer at Southeastern. Her growth and improved athleticism could be a huge factor in this year's basketball league. Would you guys agree?
Absolutely. I think she's going to have a bigger role with out there at Southeastern with the losses, especially of Audrey Wheeler. She's going to have to, and her sister Callie at the point guard position. So she's going to have to step up. She's going to be asked to take a bigger load. And, you know, just Shane, we talked last week about two-sport athletes and just her being on the soccer field, growing, the improving athleticism, like the question asked. She only gets better for basketball season. And the Panthers, I mean, they're coming off that 14-0 gold ball. They're going to need her to step up with the schemes to be that running mate, if you would. And I think you'll see some other people or other kids maybe from last year that you didn't hear about a lot step up as well. But McKinley Benton is going to be, you know, make no mistake about it, she's going to be an imperative part to that team.
I think this is a great point, and I love how this builds week to week off the show where we get different follow-up comments, because you see this in soccer. I'd been told from two or three different people how much West Falls girls soccer program's improved, and I think that's shown up in a couple matches this year. With Mitten, what she's posting number-wise has been insane in the last 2 weeks. It gives you an idea of the athleticism. She's got some great quickness, some good strength. When you look at just how dynamic Uniota is going to be in the backcourt come the winter, it's going to be really, really important that Southeastern grow physically and athletically at their guard spots. So sure, I think the email is spot on here with Mitten in terms of her growth and how that, she's a kid that can really knock it down. And I think if her athleticism improves, she'll start to add some things maybe off the dribble and give them an extra playmaker. So absolutely, I think that's a good comment.
And there you have our Hurry Up Offense, brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. Well, we're going to move into our post-game comments, brought to you by C&K Athletic Equipment. Again, the place to buy all that good stuff that'll make you a great sports athlete, just like Derek said there. You can get local school apparel, fitness gear, sports accessories, headwear, and sports equipment. For someone like me, I got to have that stuff because I don't have the talent. So I've got to look good anyway out there. Give them a call up at 116 East High Street in Circleville, 740-477-9828. So, guys, we're going to move into post-game comments, but I want to, again, say we really do appreciate all the feedback we've gotten. This has been kind of a fun show because it's been generated by mostly feedback, really. And you can get a hold of either of these two gentlemen by doing so by email. For Shane, it's admin1@svcsportzone.com. For Derek, he is the doctor, Dr. Webb, at ChillicotheGazette.com. Both of them, I guess Shane is on Facebook with two different profiles, and both of them are on Twitter. For Shane, it's @svcsportzone.com, and for Mr. Derek Webb, who will fill your timeline up with good stuff, he is @DW1509, and he is a good follow. Not that Shane isn't, but he's just more prolific on Twitter. One of the most prolific people I follow, if I could say that real fast. I'm sure, Derek, you don't have much of anything coming up this week, do you?
No, just a Labor Day every day. I wish. No, we've got a jam-packed week. Shane, I mentioned earlier, Maddie Eberst with her 2,000 assists kind of on the horizon here. We'll be covering Huntington at Uniota tomorrow. Hopefully, maybe even see you there. And then Thursday, we've got that kind of big matchup, or that first big matchup, as I mentioned earlier, for Southeastern at Edina in the SEC volleyball race. And, of course, Friday, I'll be at Eastern High School. I'm excited to go see the Eagles this week while Southeastern travels there. I hope I don't get my Southeast and East mixed up in the article. No. But Marion Franklin goes to Chillicothe. It'll be a heck of a game. Uniota goes to Waverly. We'll have coverage of all three of those games. And Saturday, we get into a little bit of cross-country action with the Zane Trace Invitational out there in Kenny Connect. So it should be fun.
All right.
What did you say Maddie was from 2000 again? What was that number?
She is 39 away.
39, yeah, that's outstanding. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's and to think this early what that number is going to be by the end of the year, that's phenomenal.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Shane, we know you've got all those things that he just mentioned coming up for the website and so forth, but let's ask you, let's kind of throw a little different spin here. What's been your favorite part of the show so far?
Well, you mentioned the fan feedback. I think for me, I just went through a fantasy football draft today of my own, and a chance to see a lot of buddies that maybe because of our adult lives take us different directions or whatever. You know, some of those guys, that's only one of a few times all year long I get to see them maybe or truly get to visit with them. So I enjoy that.
There was food involved?
Yeah, I did have a little bit of food, sure. Okay. That got me thinking about the fantasy football question tonight is really cool. I do think whenever you're doing that at the high school levels, I touched on in the Hurry Up Offense, I think you have to be, you know, careful with that and understand, you know, some of the guidelines. At least that's how I feel about it. But yeah, I think that was a lot of fun. I'm obviously as passionate as anybody about Little League. Again, I don't want to go on the soapbox every week, but if people have questions and want to have good discussion about Little League, then let's have it. And then I love the Saturday games. I know the ADs hate them. I know most of the time they don't work. Now, the other night, that gate had to be phenomenal. That was a unique situation. I'm hoping to get an opportunity, maybe see some different teams play, like with Paint Valley playing on a Saturday afternoon coming up this week. Some different things there. So, I really look forward to it. Keep in mind, August was a dead period. Winter sports are going to start gearing things up with some open gyms, and you got fall baseball going on and some different things there. So it's going to be interesting to see if we get comments about kids kind of spreading out and doing some different things here. So it's going to be a lot of fun, guys. I really, really enjoyed the show. I appreciate the effort on scheduling here, doing Monday night. And we'll get this show posted as soon as possible and look forward to some feedback. So, guys, with that in mind, until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center and all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the fine people behind the scenes and at DBK Media Services, and, of course, for Derek Webb, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.